Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat Cold Tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500. Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
Fact of the day is, koala fingerprints are so close to human fingerprints that it's hard to tell them apart, even with an electron microscope. This is pretty cool because koalas evolved totally independently, with the evolutionary trees of primates and koalas branching apart 70 million years ago. This also means that you could go to court and say that the fingerprints actually belonged to a koala and you didn't rob the bank.
Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of 6 different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit ARRCLED.com.
On today's Bulletproof Radio show, I'm really excited to have Dr. Terry Walls. Terry is a clinical professor of medicine at the University of Iowa. She's written more than 60 peer-reviewed scientific abstracts, posters, or papers, and she's most famous for her viral TED Talk that more than 1.5 million people have seen. It was called Minding My Mitochondria, and she talked about her personal battle with multiple sclerosis and how she used functional medicine, electrical stimulation of her muscles, and a paleo-style diet to be able to walk again. She rides her bicycle to work, and she was formerly in a wheelchair. Her book is coming out pretty soon, which is called The Walls Protocol, How I Beat Progressive MS Using Paleo Principles and Functional Medicine. I can't wait to read that. And I've had the good fortune to spend some time at a conference with Terry and get to have lunch with her and compare which of us could eat more asparagus than the other. For the record, I won. And she's already been on Bulletproof Radio episode number 29, which is quite a while back. And she also was a guest on the Creative Live broadcast I did not so long ago. So I'm a big fan of her work because not only is Terry a physician, Terry's a biohacker. She literally hacked her own body, went beyond just what a traditional doctor would have done, and said, look, this is a matter of survival. I'm not messing around here. And she did it, and she won. And Terry, I admire that greatly. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so very much.
Tell me about the Walls Protocol. Like, what do you do, the basic things nutritionally?
So the nutrition In the book, The Walls Protocol, I've laid out a roadmap. So someone who's taking the standard American diet, still a lot of carbs, a lot of processed foods, we can ease them first into the Walls diet, which has the usual 9 cups of fruits and vegetables, lots of berries, clean protein, organic. As they get comfortable with that for a couple of months, then I move them to the Walls Paleo, take out even the gluten-free grains more fully. We have them do that for a couple of months when they're comfortable with that. And then we move them, if they're willing, to the Paleo Plus plan, which is much more of a ketogenic diet. I use medium-chain triglycerides so we can have more of the non-starchy vegetables and berries, but still maintain a very nice ketosis. So that's the food plan. You can enter at any of the three levels, but I really want people to progress from Walls to Walls Paleo to Paleo Plus. Then I also spend a lot of time talking about exercise, electrical stimulation, the importance of stress. If you have cortisol is through the roof, that creates a very toxic environment. So we address that. And we address sleep, because all mammalians need to sleep. So we talk about how critical that is. I go into a long conversation about vitamin supplements, which ones make sense, why we designed the diet the way we did, and based on the research about what vitamins and supplements are good for brains, good for detoxification. And then, of course, I talk a lot about functional medicine and more comprehensive assessments through a functional medicine practitioner.
That's a great summary. And it's funny because the things that I recommend for higher performance for people are pretty darn similar to that. I think I hit 11 servings of more vegetables than fruits, but like overall, yes, we're in the same camp.
We're very similar.
Yeah, and it's funny because you came at it from this MS protocol thing. I never was diagnosed with a specific neurodegenerative disease, but I can tell you, if you're getting brain fog and you're 100 pounds overweight in your mid-20s, you've got some serious metabolic problems coming. Why did you focus on mitochondria as something that was particularly important? And for listeners who are just joining in, mitochondria are the power plants in our cells. But so Terry, what made that the center thing for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I first was diagnosed with MS, like most docs, I started reading the medical literature, and all I did was getting myself really upset with how grim the future looked, with half of people being disabled by fatigue within 10 years and half having serious gait problems. So my family convinced me to stop reading the literature, which I did, until I hit the wheelchair 3 years after diagnosis. That was about 2003. Then I knew how bad things were going to be, and so I went back. And at night, I started reading basic science about the animal models of MS and the animal models of other diseases with shrinking brains, Parkinson's, Huntington's, Lou Gehrig's disease, Alzheimer's dementia. And I saw
I think being a politician is another one of those, right?
Yeah, no, pretty close. particularly in the American Congress. So the common theme in all of these diseases was that the brain cells were getting it's time to die signal too early from the mitochondria. Yeah. And that led to a killing of the brain cells. So then I started searching for studies where mitochondria had been protected. And that's where I first started using vitamins and supplements, which, by the way, Dave, did not lead to any recovery. It slowed the speed of my disability, so it sort of flattened it out. I was still getting steadily worse. I had discovered Paleo Principles in 2002, which was before I hit the wheelchair, and had adopted a paleo diet as described by Lauren Cardane. 2002.
Yeah, very, very original school, kind of old school thing.
Still, declining. And by the way, that was low fat. When I discovered functional medicine, I took their brain course in the midst of my brain fog. So it was a lot of work.
Yeah.
I had a longer list of nutrients. So I started taking them in pill form. And then, a month into that, I had this brilliant epiphany that I should get them from the food I was eating. So then I went back to researching where these 31 nutrients were in the food supply and reorganized my diet according to these long lists of foods I needed to stress. Now, as I began to teach this to the public, I realized I needed a system, and that's how I came up with the 3 cups of greens, 3 cups of sulfur-rich, 3 cups of bright colors, grass-fed meat, organ meat, and seaweed, because that would allow people to, you know, pretty reproducibly be choosing foods that would get them those 31 nutrients.
When you did that for yourself, did you measure the shrinkage of your brain using any kind of brain imaging?
So we have MRIs of my brains, and I'm picking up more lesions as my disease progresses. And so when I recovered so dramatically, my neurologist was thrilled. He said, let's get another MRI. Let's see how much things have improved. And we were both disappointed. The lesions were still there. There were no new lesions. And we didn't do it on the research scan, so we can't say that the brain volume increased or not. What I think, you know, this matches what is seen in the literature, that brain damage related to gluten sensitivity, when seen late, stays. If it's very early, you might regress those lesions. However, even if the lesions don't change, function can dramatically improve, as it did in my case. So clearly my brain is rewiring around the scar. So the scar doesn't really matter. I'm not getting new lesions, and my function continues to improve.
So do you think that the fact you were using electrical stimulation protocols might have driven the brain to change more quickly, to route around the parts where you had lesions?
Well, it's certain. So when you use electrical stimulation, you release a lot of endorphins, which lowers inflammation. You also release a lot of nerve growth factors and factors that increase the size of the muscles and the number of mitochondria in the muscles locally. And at least in animal models, you increase that in spinal fluid. No one has tested that in humans. And I doubt that we ever will, because it would be hard to get the IRB to approve doing spinal taps on healthy volunteers.
They're very painful. I did not enjoy my spinal tap one bit. It was one of the more horrible procedures.
The tap was not so bad, but the spinal headache for the week after was quite miserable.
Yeah. So I wouldn't want to volunteer for that study either.
Yeah.
So we do know, though, so there's some big benefits there. Why doesn't everyone do electrical stimulation of their muscles?
Oh, sure. So when you get FDA approval for neuromuscular electrical stimulation, or eSTIM, the device makers got approval for muscle pain, muscle spasm, disuse, atrophy, and originally studied it in the setting of healthy adult athletes, and they were speeding the recovery time. Now, some research scientists are studying this in the setting of cerebral palsy and stroke. And when I read those articles back in 2007, those were the only other clinical studies. And so I convinced my physical therapist to give me a test session. He said, you know, Terry, it's painful. It exhausts our athletes. You have a lot of MS pain. We can grow muscles in your legs, but I'm not sure your brain can talk to those muscles. You may be making your legs heavier and less usable and actually hurting your walking ability. But he agreed to let me try it, and he was right. It hurt a lot, but at the end of the session, he did my left paraspinous, my right paraspinous, and then my quad. So I had done about 24 minutes worth of exercise. And at that point, I could only do about 10 minutes, or I'd be flat on my back, exhausted for hours. So I had more than doubled my exercise, and it felt great. Yeah. It was the best I'd felt in a really long time. So for the next couple of weeks, I came into clinic, and I had to set up the device in front of Dave, so he knew that I knew how to operate the device, how to operate the electrodes, and could correctly do everything. When he was satisfied that things were going okay, I was tolerating it, I could safely operate the device, then he found a home unit, and I began doing this at home. And his advice was, he wanted me to work on the muscles that flex my ankles, so my toes go upward, and on my belly and back muscles. Because at that time, I couldn't sit in a regular chair anymore. Wow. I was either in a recliner or in bed, because my back was so weak. And he said, you know, stimulate while you're doing your exercise. And then if you can, try and get 15 minutes per muscle group, and you could go up to an hour. So over the next several months, I, you know, did my exercises with STEM, and there, it was easier with STEM, and slowly increased my electrical time. And also, I'd say, because I'm an athlete, in a former life, I was a black belt taekwondo person, and I was competing nationally, and so I was pretty comfortable with having the demands of a very rigorous training schedule. And that I kept, you know, detailed logs and kept advancing things. But I also stayed in regular contact with my physical therapist, who was stunned by the rapidity of changes he was seeing. So I did the E-STEM, and then I added the supplements and the diet, and it was magic once I added the diet.
Yeah.
The speed of change that happened.
Now, without getting too technical, there is this stuff called myelin, and you write about it, or you will be writing about it in your book. Myelin is the insulating part around the nerves. And
yes.
I understand from my own electrical stimulation work that when you increase the amount of current that you ask a nerve to carry, that the body will naturally say, I better put more myelin on this nerve because I want to insulate the nerve. Does that general description from the way, as a layperson biohacker, I think about it, does that match your experience, or do I have it a little off?
Well, certainly doing the electrical stimulation increases the tracts that and the responsiveness between the brain and the muscles. The precise mechanism that that happens is not yet been elucidated.
Okay.
But clearly we have better connectivity. Better transmission that occurs. Is it because we have more myelin, or is it because we are growing more axons and more connections themselves, or is it both?
And, good question.
I think it's probably both.
I'd guess that too.
The electrical stimulation certainly grows more muscles, and if you do it during your exercise, it makes the exercise easier for MS patients. And what we observed, and what I certainly personally observed, is this has a terrific impact on mood. Certainly, the endorphins are really good for your mood. It improves the joy factor, I would put it pretty commonly. It certainly was very helpful for many of our study participants, and I found it to be very, very helpful for me.
One of the things that people with chronic illness, and even some people who don't have real chronic illness but are just looking for a little boost, that they've experimented with is a therapy called low-dose naltrexone.
Oh, sure.
And for our listeners, naltrexone is an opiate kind of blocker that's used for people who are recovering from addiction. And when you take very low doses of it, though, it can raise the natural...
It's a natural killer cell?
Yes.
It's a very helpful immune cell that helps rebalance our immunity into a more natural state, less aggressive at attacking of self. It's quite beneficial. And there are certainly, you know, it's of interest. I tried it for a while, did not perceive any benefit.
You did try it. I tried it also, and you know, I did not have MS. I questioned whether I certainly know I had chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia and Lyme disease and toxic mold exposure, which is a pretty good mix, and related. All three of those kind of can come together, and it's really interesting. You tried it, you didn't feel it. I didn't notice a difference after 6 months of using it, but there are others who had a huge thing. What else did you try that didn't work?
Interesting question. There were some vitamins and supplements that I added along the way and felt like, yeah, this is not adding much. I try to be very careful and do things one at a time and wait a month, make a decision. This is helpful or not. If it's not helping, take it back off. So some vitamins and supplements were helpful. I added some more. Didn't really help. I think... the food is certainly the most critical part.
Yeah. It's like 70% of anything, I think. If you don't get the food right, you're not going to make it.
Yes, yes. Now, there are some other therapies that I looked at and decided not to try, one of them being venom therapy, bee venom therapy.
Oh, wow.
So I looked at it, was clearly tempted. But, you know, again, when I would identify a potential therapy to try, I would go back to PubMed and say, okay, has anyone written about this? Is there even a case report of this working? So if it was out in the internet chatter, you know, that was good. But I wanted to see, was there something about it? Was it working? Was there something written about it having adverse side effects, and what kind of monitoring and risks were there? So my conclusion was the scientific studies were really quite mixed without showing any clear benefit. And there were hazards of anaphylaxis, that is death. And so I decided, no, I did not do the eventum therapy. But you don't understand why people would think about it. Another therapy that's become very popular with the MS folks is the blowing up of the blocks in the veins that drain the brain. And Zamboni, he's a radiologist whose wife has MS, and he had theorized that the iron deposits around the blood vessels were related to congestion become from blocks in the brain. Did some angiograms, found what he considered to be narrowing, and has used surgical interventions such as the balloon angioplasty to open those up. Now, in some people, there's dramatic improvement that happens very quickly within hours. But if people don't change all their environmental factors, when you traumatize the vein, the immune cells are going to come in and inflame that vein to try and heal it, and things will narrow back up. So there are some reports of people in peer-reviewed journals of how frequently people have to come back in for multiple procedures. And what Zamboni reports is that his intervention is most effective for fatigue. In my clinical practice and in my clinical trial, the Walls diet is most effective for fatigue, and we see that kind of benefit within 3 months, sometimes within a month.
Yeah.
So, you know, my feeling is, why have somebody manipulate the veins in near my brain when I could get similar results by doing something so radical as eating vegetables, berries, you know, and going organic?
Yeah, it's the low-hanging fruit. Getting the diet right, avoiding the things that are trigger foods for you. It sounds so simple. It takes a certain amount of learning. And I'm really looking forward to seeing your book because you'll explain it in a certain way. The Bulletproof Diet infographics, another attempt. And you know, the whole paleo primal thing, even raw vegan dieters, you know, they're looking to try and optimize that. And I've come to the conclusion after trying all these things that getting enough of the right kinds of fat is probably the most important thing. No, do you agree with that? I'm curious because you're so high on the vegetable polyphenols. Like, rank those?
It depends on where you are in your disease process.
Ah.
So I think that's important. And one of the things that my interpretation of the literature, when we look at hunter-gatherer societies, is what's uniform, although they eat very different things depending on the locale, is the micronutrient density, the vitamins, minerals, the antioxidants. So I designed my diet to maximize the micronutrient density using foods I could readily get in the Midwest of the United States. And then when we analyzed the diet in our clinical trial, I discovered that I need to give people more structure so they could get their nutrient density up to mine. So that's why we created the Walls Paleo, to give people a little more guidance on what I wanted them to be eating. And then the Paleo Plus, we ramped it up by going ketogenic in a way that still maximizes those micronutrients. In the book, you'll see these really great graphs where we took a week's worth of menus in each of the diets, and then I had my research dietitian do the nutrient density analysis, what nutrients were being consumed for the week. And we compare that to the averages for women in my age group, and we adjusted, because I'm big, I'm almost 6 feet tall, so we adjusted the calories back to the average woman. So it's back to 1,790 calories. And you'll see that we exceed the RDAs 2 to 9-fold, depending on the nutrient. And in all three diet levels, the nutrient density is preserved and is dramatically higher than the standard American diet. And so I think that's a large part of why our diet is so successful for so many different types of disease states.
Yeah, I would argue that a diet like this is also going to be preventative for disease, which is such a, you know, because you've done it, like climbing out of the hole of being sick and even looking at death is so much work, and it requires so much willpower and energy and dollars, frankly, that it's easier just to do it right, eat mostly right most of the time, and your risk of all these things happening just goes down so much. So I'm hoping that people adopt this style of eating on a more broad basis, just because it's a lot easier to not get sick than it is to recover.
Well, you know, some of the things that I've observed in clinics seeing patients. So, you know, in 2007, 2008, I transformed my health. I see the world of health and disease very differently. I changed my clinical practice to emphasize diet and lifestyle. And that's what I'm talking about in clinics. Since 2008, now six years later, I see that the public is more and more embracing of the idea of diet as a big factor in their health. They're more willing to consider that gluten is part of the problem, much more interested in embracing a food as opposed to a pill solution to their health. I think the patients are far ahead of the medical establishment, in part because of the internet and the fine work that you're doing and Jimmy Moore and I'm doing at letting the public know food is how we get either terribly sick or we can restore our health. What's also exciting, though, is that the medical community is beginning to come along a bit.
Yeah.
This morning, I presented to the primary care department at the VA hospital I work at about functional medicine, the principles behind it and the concepts. And talked about the therapeutic lifestyle clinic that we've opened up now. And the providers actually were very excited. They wanted to know if I'd be willing to have a monthly functional medicine course for them.
Bring
them. I'm like, okay, sure, we'll do that. So we'll be working on getting that arranged.
Thank you for doing that. All of the doctors I know entered the healing profession because they wanted to heal people. Some of them also wanted to make a living, funny enough. There's nothing wrong with that. They didn't get that much nutritional training or functional medicine training because that's not how the schools are structured. So because you've had your TED Talk success, and it's hard to argue with the personal success you've had, you're in a unique position to influence physicians to change the way they care for their patients. So thank you for doing that, because they're a part of this, part of the puzzle for fixing what's happening to people.
I'll tell you, though, one of the big ways that I'm doing it, though, is I'm doing the clinical research.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Our first paper has gone in. You know, there's this little dance, go back and forth between the reviewer, and you respond to their questions, critiques. But I anticipate we'll soon be able to say it's accepted. And in December, we'll have everybody through the first 12 months. We'll be submitting papers again. We've been presenting our findings at scientific meetings around the country. So it's that peer-reviewed presentations to scientific meetings and in journals that will be indexed on PubMed that will make it easier for, A, the public to see what I'm doing and the medical community to see that, yes, you know, I'm doing this as a scientist, that we are taking the time to measure our results, make sure they're reproducible, and validate that this wasn't just a miracle that happened to me.
Yeah,
it can happen to quite a few people.
It's repeatable. So clinical trials are really important. But you look at things like polyphenols and a variety of polyphenols.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, are you doing clinical trials on something like, are you quantifying how many polyphenols were in this yellow pepper versus this red pepper and whether they were fresh? Like, how do we do this?
So the traditional way of doing a clinical trial is to extract the nutrient of interest, put it in a pill, and have a placebo pill. And the functional medicine, and I would say, that's ridiculous. We're a complex biological system. You have to have a much more complex intervention for complex diseases. And fortunately for me, my institutional review board said, we're going to approve your study, but only if you do a replication of what you did.
Oh, cool.
So That's what we did. So same supplements, same diet, as near as I could quantify. When I realized people still weren't following my diet well enough, I structured it a little more vigorously for them. Same electrical protocols. We personalized the exercise, the eSTEM, to match their level of disability. And so we were very, very much into the systematic approach to maximizing the efficiency of their biochemistry as well as we could. Now, not everyone improves, but we do have some very stunning videos that we're going to get to show when we finally get published with the whole trial. It'll be very exciting.
Well, it's when you see anyone get up out of a wheelchair and someone who's suffered greatly like that, it's a pretty emotional thing, to be honest. And I just love that you're standing up and talking about this. Also, some of the details are really important. One of the things that you talk about maybe more so than even most of the paleo people is, you know, the variety of colors in your diet. And what is the role of colors and polyphenols? And why are they so important?
Well, in study after study, we see that the polyphenols lower the risk of dementia, cognitive decline, neurodegeneration. They also lower the risk of heart disease, obesity, and cancers. The precise mechanisms, we aren't sure. My observation is that the polyphenols are very helpful at maintaining the integrity of the membranes for mitochondria. So they're really very helpful at protecting the redox status within the cell and within the membranes.
So here's a question. Do you drink coffee?
You know, I never acquired the taste. So I drink tea, mm-hmm. and my tea is, you know, like 1/4 full-fat coconut milk and 3/4 tea.
Got and it. So it's kind of like the Bulletproof coffee recipe. Okay.
Very similar. So I'm working on maintaining my ketosis. So I have lots of medium-chain triglycerides from my coconut milk in my tea. I have that morning, have that evening. I eat two meals a day and try to have a 12 to 16-hour fast every day.
Very similar recommendations. I love this. Like I do the same things.
We're converging, you know?
Yeah, no question about it. I didn't realize that you were doing only two meals a day. The reason I asked about coffee is not because of, you know, Bulletproof coffee and all that, but it is the number one source of polyphenols in the average American's diet. And tea is also very high in it, right? So you're drinking tea. Yeah. And
yerba mate is good. Ruia's tea is very good.
What about the other highest polyphenol sources? Like, that's just the one I know of because it's number one. Okay. What are the things that you'd say people should look at to get more polyphenols?
So I particularly like aronia berries and cranberries. These are very tart berries, and so you're going to have very high polyphenols. I look for things that are black and not too sweet. You can have black grapes, certainly, but I'd rather you do things like black raspberries, blackberries. The aronia berries, because they're a little more tart, you get a little more polyphenol with fewer calories. You could also do beets. If you do beets, I prefer that they be grated raw. They're terrific additions to a smoothie. So I grate a little beets, some coconut milk, and ginger. That makes a lovely smoothie as well. And so I'll rotate between my berry smoothie and a beet smoothie to get that purple-black color every day. And then for reds, it's a matter of looking at where you're going to pick up your reds. It could be cranberries, it could be peppers, it could be tomatoes. And I know some of your audience members are probably having chest pain, thinking like, oh my God, she's talking about nightshades. She actually eats nightshades. So I think, you know, I do talk about if people are still symptomatic after going through the WALS protocol, Yes, they may need to have food allergy testing and know what foods they're sensitive to. Not everyone has a problem with nightshades. You may have a problem with nightshades, and I talk about that. But if you don't have a problem with nightshades, there's some terrific nutrition in those peppers, in those tomatoes, and a lot of health-promoting benefits.
Yeah, that's why they're orange on the Bulletproof diet. They're not, you know, red, like, don't eat them. They're like, you got it. These are warning. Like, try them and see what they do. Because like,
but they have a lot of great nutrition for them. Red cabbage, red kale, red lettuce. So many of our traditional vegetables, carrots, were originally purple, for example. So there are many of our vegetables have lots of pigment in them. And my advice is grow what you can locally, try and get more heirloom varieties, and try and maximize the color so that you have something yellow-orange every day, something red every day, something that purple, blue, black group every day.
It makes good sense. Getting quality vegetables like that is important. What's the role of freshness? Like, you live in the Midwest where a lot of that stuff isn't grown and it's a week old by the time you get it. Do you eat a lot of frozen vegetables? Do you eat kind of the wilted ones?
So I have a hierarchy. Fresh out of my yard is preferable. Fresh from a farmer's yard or farm that I know and I can buy immediately, I would come next. From the store would be third. From across the country is fourth. Out of the country, distant fifth. Then I'd prefer to have frozen. Dried, if it's dried at low temperature, can be good. People have asked me, well, what about my magic powdered purple blend or magic powdered red blend or magic green blend? And you look at the list of these blends, and there are 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 different things in there. If you have an autoimmune problem, you may well have developed some food sensitivity issues. And as soon as you start taking something that has a long list, you're introducing the possibility that you're going to have a food sensitivity issue to something on that list. So I'd much rather you eat a lot of asparagus in one day, and then tomorrow a lot of broccoli, and then tomorrow a lot of beets and carrots or red cabbage, as opposed to 50 different things on the list today.
It's hard to eliminate one thing from the 50 that's your trigger. And there's also, there's good research about demyelination and certain mold toxins. I have yet to find a powdered vegetable blend with 50 different dried vegetables that doesn't have mold toxins in it from at least one of the vegetables. And one of the products I was looking at formulating, like I was pretty far down the pathway, that had maca in it. I ran it through the standard bulletproof mold test that most companies never do, and I found 13 parts per million of aflatoxin in it. And just said, and this was a very high-end supplier doing it. And if you take someone with immune sensitivities and you give them a daily dose of aflatoxin, it is not going to end well. And so I'm skeptical of those patterns. There are some really high-quality ones where some batches are pretty pristine, but there are others where I know most companies don't do that level of testing, and I'm concerned when you powder that many vegetables. Are you as concerned as I am, or am I just a little paranoid out there?
I don't use those products for very similar reasons. I think you ought to eat whole food that you've grown or your friends have grown, and frozen food I think is safer. When you start getting into processing and these powders, unknown variables, it makes me quite uneasy.
Got it. So I'm not surprised we agree that we tend to think pretty similarly, but we don't when it comes to garlic and onions. So you gave a talk at Ancestral Health Summit, which is like the major paleo conference, about garlic and onions and blood fluidity. So I look at them as medical herbs, and I'm not opposed to their use. I don't look at them as daily food sources for other reasons, but what are the benefits of garlic and onions that you've talked about?
So there are a number of studies that have looked at the rheology or how thick or fluid blood is. And they used aged garlic extract, two capsules of that, which is equivalent of six garlic. And by consuming the garlic, you increase the arginine in the blood, you improve the endothelial function, and improve blood fluidity. So these are allicin sulfides that are in the garlic, onions, chives that do that. If you go down the kale, cabbage family, you have a number of compounds, sulforaphane, for example, that are going to induce glutathione synthetase. And all of us would like to see more glutathione in our cells and in our brain. So that's part of why I designed the diet to have 3 cups of sulfur-rich vegetables from the cabbage family and the onion family to induce glutathione in the brain, induce the enzymes that we use to metabolize and process and eliminate the stored toxins in our fat that we have from all the heavy metals, plastic solvents, and other harmful compounds. And so it's actually very, very intentional with that. You know, with the caveat that we are all unique biochemically. And so I let people know that if these food groups, for whatever reason, are clearly not agreeing with you, you still have to honor that. For example, part of the diet is 3 cups of greens. We have a couple of folks in our study, and I've seen this in clinic as well, who can't tolerate 3 cups of greens. It gives them diarrhea in the run. So they come back to a cup and a half or only have cooked greens, and they do fine. We all still have to absolutely pay attention to how our unique system reacts to these recommendations.
It's very true that the individuality thing has to trump the other things going on. Now, the downside of garlic and onions for me is what they do to alpha waves in the brain. So they suppress alpha. And people with neurodegenerative diseases have a problem with maintaining higher alpha waves anyway, according to some of the neurofeedback guys I've worked with. So the recommendation for me is, you know, if you're doing well and you don't need them for a medical reason, then garlic and onions probably ought not to be, you know, 6 cloves a day. I would eat 6 cloves of garlic a day when I was a raw vegan. Like, I like the taste of the stuff. It's good for me. So I'm just going to load up on it. But I can see an effect even in my kids if they eat garlic. Like, they're whinier, they're less able to focus. And since I'm trying to get people to, you know, turn on their brains and focus, use them with consciousness. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. Send me those references. I want to check that out.
Okay. They're relatively, I would like to see a real study done. Yeah. These are observations from guys done neurofeedback for 30 years. And literally training alpha, and he said, I cannot train alpha in people who eat garlic because it doesn't work. You eliminate garlic, it works. And there's some chemical reasons. I'll send you what I've got. It's relatively thin, but I notice it for my meditation practice. Garlic breaks my meditation. And so I'm like, well, if we want people to be calm and focused, it should be a medical herb, not a flavoring thing that you eat every single day of your life. And I get a lot of crap in the paleosphere for that recommendation. But I stick by it just because it's there, and people who train their brains typically notice the nuanced differences in their consciousness from them.
I think you have to honor what you observe.
Yeah, exactly. What about raw meat? Do you ever eat raw meat?
So raw meat is what our Inuit friends in the Arctic would eat during winter times. And they typically ferment that. And so it's fermented, sort of cheesy, rank, very odoriferous compounds, which, by the way, I spent time in Alaska, and I had the opportunity to do that. This was during the period of my life when I was vegetarian, so that was quite a challenge to go out with my Yupik friends, but I was, I hung in there, and I ate all that stuff and survived. Now, if I'm going to have, so I like ceviche, which is fish products that have been sort of cooked in acid. I think having raw meat has the advantage in that it's more digestible. The protein hasn't been denatured or the shape shifted by heating. Mm-hmm. The downside of raw meat is what was the health of the animal?
Yeah.
And the risk, the public health risk of bacterial or parasitic infections. You can decrease that somewhat by putting the meat in a deep freeze for at least 14 days, thawing it out, soaking it in salt and vinegar solution for 24 hours, and then say putting it in a dehydrator and making a jerky out of it. Yeah, and I have done that, but I do that only when I'm getting meat from farmers that I trust and that I have very high confidence this was a completely healthy animal. In my book, I acknowledge that there are reasons why raw meat may be superior, but there are very real public health risks.
Well said. I did do raw meat. I was a raw vegan, then a raw omnivore when I realized the vegan diet was making me sick. So I would follow exactly the recipes you're talking about. And sometimes I would use a few drops of iodine in water, and I'd soak the meat in iodized water as well to sterilize the outside. But yeah, you better know like the name of that animal if you're going to eat it raw. And where I live now, I do know all of the animals. I know where they came from. I know the people who raised them, and it's all within a few miles of my house. And I would eat anything in my freezer raw, but I give it to my kids raw sometimes, but I prepare it properly. So,
but if you're out in the public, you know, with someone else's raw meat.
Yeah, it's too sketchy for me.
Yeah, you know, I'm like, well, you have to be a lot more thoughtful.
Last question before we go into sort of the end of the show. How much does it cost for someone to get their own neuromuscular electrical stimulation device at home?
Okay. So to get the device, the first thing I'd really urge people to do is have a physical therapy evaluation. If you have MS, you're going to have variable lesions. And so your gait, the function of your muscles are going to be impaired in your unique way. So you want to know what muscles are weak, what exercises you need to strengthen, and for you, where the electrodes go. Now, in my book, I do have a chart on where I put the electrodes for me, with the caveat that my therapist put the electrodes on, turned on the current, saw what muscle was stimulated, then moved them around to make sure that they were correctly located for me, and we'd have to do it for you as well, Dave, because you have been integrated in your own unique way.
Mm-hmm.
So you need a physical therapy evaluation. You need some sessions in clinic to show that you can learn where to put the electrodes and exercise accordingly. Then you can get the device. The devices that you can buy without a prescription, by regulation, have a much lower milliamp output. The prescription devices will have a higher output and need to be prescribed by a doc and trained, overseen by a physical therapist. So you have the price of the consult, you have the price of a couple clinic sessions, and then you have the price of the device. The devices will run, I would say, between, if they're non-prescription, you could probably get devices for $100, but they don't put out much power.
Yeah, they don't do much.
And I've tried those. That's really not much. Yeah. Or you can get the prescription devices. The MP300 and the Continuum that I got had a list price of around $800. If you're getting them through your insurance or a direct copay, you could probably negotiate a smaller price. But you really need to look at it, the whole picture, because you need a physical therapist to help you design the correct exercise program and to confirm where you put the electrodes on you to get the stimulation that you want.
Yeah, I have my own set of electrodes, stick-on ones, and I have several electrical devices like that. And I do, actually over Skype sometimes, I'll consult with people who are better at mapping muscle and muscle activation out than I am and working on specific exercises, not because I'm recovering from something like that, but because I don't exercise very much and I get enormous benefits cognitively, metabolically. You know, you can break out into sweat in 3 minutes and start, you know, breathing hard. And it's one of the more intense workouts I know how to do in the least amount of time. And I feel there's neurological benefits that go beyond what I get from lifting heavy things.
Yes. Yes. You know, so because I don't have enough to do, I also created a therapeutic garment that we've developed to use with the device that I've been using along with this because I wanted to be more convenient. I mean, eSTIM is a very effective way to help grow more muscles, more muscle mass more quickly. And it clearly does great stuff for my brain. It looks like it does great stuff for other people's brains as well.
Yeah, the first biohacking conference ever I put on in January of this year in 2013. And we brought in someone to do 2 days of this on perfectly healthy people. And you know, they noticed the benefits right away. So I hope that 10 years from now, when you go to 24-hour, whatever the current health club du jour is, that you'll be able to get access to this sort of thing for healthy people applied in the right place, because it's probably more efficient than some of the elliptical motion machines and things like that, even for healthy people. So time will tell.
Well, I mean, I certainly, it's the intent that in my book, I talk about electrical stim, in the research world, it's now being used for heart failure, chronic lung disease, rheumatoid arthritis, obesity, to help these people begin improve and increase their exercise capability. And I'm working with physical therapy societies to get them to understand that this is a modality that needs to be offered to more and more people because it is so effective at taking somebody who's severely deconditioned and beginning the journey to getting them back to normal function again.
Yeah, and it, from the mitochondria to the nervous system to the muscles to the cardiovascular, it's a powerful therapy. I love it that you're writing about that and not just about nutrition, because it's a very important hack.
It's a whole package. The diet's very big. You know, when I did the TED Talk, I only had 18 minutes, so
yeah.
I only talked about the diet. But the protocol is much bigger than just the diet. You know, we haven't talked about stress or sleep.
Yeah, those are big.
Those are also huge. I tell my study subjects and my clinical practice that the nutrition is the basis. If you get that wrong, you're not going to get anywhere. The next layer is making sure your cortisol, your endogenous stress hormones, get normalized, put back to idle. And then, so that'll take care of your fatigue. That's going to improve your brain fog. But if you want to move again, you're going to have to do the exercise and do the e-stim. Now, if you don't have access to e-stim, just work with a therapist and do the exercise. It'll be slower, but you can still recover.
Yeah.
But and all of it needs to happen. If you leave something out, you're leaving a lot of recovery on the table.
It very, very well said. There's a question that I asked you on episode 29 a long time ago, and I'll ask it again because it's the question I always ask people at the end of a show. Given everything you've learned so far, not just about, you know, MS or about nutrition or the other things we just talked about, what are the top three things people should know when if they want to perform better or just be at their very best?
Well, you have to have a nutrient-dense diet and get rid of the processed crap. So nutrient-dense vegetables and high-quality essential fats, high-quality protein. To normalize your stress hormones and sleep schedule. You have to move your body. If you can get access to it, electrical stimulation will accelerate that physical recovery. But if you can't get access to it, not to fret, don't make yourself crazy, because you can still recover with very thoughtful, well-planned out exercise programs.
Wonderful. Terry, it was great to chat with you again. And I guess we never even got a chance to talk about the glutathione or the brain octane and all that sort of stuff.
I was very pleased with them, by the way.
Oh, you were? Okay. I meant to ask you about them, but you know, this is no infomercial. Like, this is an information sharing podcast, and if people like it, they might buy our stuff. But I know when we chatted last, I was excited to share some with you because you care so much about your mitochondrial function like I do, and like they're designed for that. So we'll talk about that some other time. But thank you for being on the show. And would you tell our listeners where they can find out more info about you?
Okay. So please go to my website, Terry. T-E-R-R-Y, Walls, W-A-H-L-S, .com. And do check out my book, The Walls Protocol, which is available on Barnes & Noble and on Amazon. It will change your life. Again, that's The Walls Protocol.
Terry, can't wait to see you at another conference or to come and visit you at the University of Iowa. Have an awesome day.
Great. Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider.
This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.